Well, welcome everyone. It's a beautiful day in Ann Arbor, so thank you for being here with us. And I assume if you are, it's because you are curious about ADHD, you are affected by it somehow, yourself or in your family, or perhaps you are an educator or a mental health professional here to learn more. October is ADHD Awareness Month, and that's why we're having this event. For 10 years, Dr. Jerry Markle has done a fabulous job coordinating with U of M to do an Awareness Month event, and they're not having it this year, so we decided to do one ourselves, but of course, we'll never fill those shoes, Jerry, but we're going to do our best. What I'd like to do today is I'm going to give an overview of what ADHD is, because there's some of you in the room are probably very, very familiar and some of you who are just learning. So I'm going to give a basic overview, and then Sari and I are going to do a bit of an interview instead of a formal presentation. We thought let's switch it up, do something different. So we have our colleague Susan here who's going to be asking us some questions that are very common. Questions we get asked about ADHD, and then we're going to have a panel of some of our dearest colleagues and team members talk a bit about various services in the community for adult ADHD. Who here feels that they're kind of like just learning about ADHD and just learning, just a basic feel? Okay, good. I just wanted to get a sense before I explain it. So I think what I'll start with is talking a bit about what ADHD is not. Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is largely a misnomer. Now, you've heard ADHD probably exchanged with ADD quite a bit. That can be confusing. That has to do with how the diagnostic label has changed over the years as we've learned more. But ADHD, like I said, is still a bit of a misnomer, and this is why. It's really not so much of a deficit of anything. In fact, sometimes it's a surplus. This is why when you talk to someone with ADHD about their interests, maybe they just get really stuck on it, or if they're doing something they love, they have trouble stopping, but they're wonderful at it, and they've developed this strong skill set or strength in one area, and that's because of what we call hyperfocus. So ADHD isn't just about a deficit of attention. Sometimes it's actually about having a bit of a surplus. I'll get to that more in a moment. ADHD is also not entirely all about hyperactivity. Some people with ADHD have hyperactivity, but many do not. Women are less likely to have hyperactivity. And much of what we know about ADHD to this day is informed by research that is based predominantly on white, hyperactive, school-aged boys in the Western Hemisphere. And that has greatly shaped how we talk about ADHD, how it's been labeled, and how it's been presented in the media. Of course, over the past 10 to 20 years, thanks to a lot of the folks in this room that you're going to hear from tonight, we've learned that ADHD doesn't just turn off when you hit 18 or 21. It, for most folks, continues on into adulthood. It's not just a disorder of childhood. It's a syndrome that spans the lifespan because you're born with your brain, right? I mean, it doesn't just magically flip one way or the other with this sort of thing. And it's a neurobiological condition. We know that as well from a lot of MRI, fMRI studies, brain scans, and what we know about the neurochemicals in the brain. They're different when someone has ADHD. There's just a bit of different wiring. And for that reason, people with ADHD struggle with attention and concentration, as most of you might be familiar with, but also what's called executive functioning skills. So executive functioning is this umbrella term we use to describe a set of skills or abilities that help regulate our behavior, our inner world and our outer world every day. It's kind of like the conductor of an orchestra, only in this case, instead of strings and percussion, you have, for instance, let's take attention. and focus. But with ADHD, it's not just about tuning in. It's also about tuning out everything here while I'm tuned in, and then being able to shift. If Susan asks me a question, I have to be able to turn and answer her and then shift back. Well, that system gets a little glitchy with ADHD. Another one would be organization. A lot of times we think of an ADHD adult or child that kind of leaves a mess of things in their wake or has a messy desk. Well, it's also about inner organization, the ability to decide what to do next, organize thoughts and behaviors. So it's also this inner sense of calmness that often can be missing in an ADHD brain because things just don't feel quite organized on the inside. Another one would be activation, putting on the accelerator, being able to get going. And now everyone struggles from time to time with starting a report for work, Lord knows, doing taxes. Everyone hates it. But with ADHD, it's extra hard, and that's because the brain mechanism that kicks us into gear even when we don't want to do something, that says, hey, tomorrow's April 15th, you better do that, it doesn't fire quite the same way and with quite the same ease for someone who has this neurological difference. And so what you see is someone with ADHD struggling a lot to get some of these small things done that nobody likes, but everyone can seem to do more or less well without this challenge. And they may feel unmotivated. They may feel tired a lot of the time, even when they've gotten enough sleep. That has to do a bit with mental alertness. You'll hear a lot of adults with ADHD talk about falling asleep while driving, falling asleep in class, falling asleep in meetings, falling asleep in movies, even though they really want to see it. It's not so much that they're not interested. It's not so much that they didn't get enough sleep or aren't taking care of themselves. It's that their brain wiring requires a little bit more stimulation to get in the zone. There are several other of these categories. To name a few really quickly, memory is another one. And putting on the brakes. We don't just put on the accelerator, right? We also have to put on the brakes sometimes and pull back. We have to have some inhibition, think before we act, and so forth. In fact, one of the criteria for diagnosis of ADHD is fails to learn from mistakes. Well, it's, again, I have a bit of a problem with that language, and this is why. An adult with ADHD will tell you, I know I made that mistake, and I didn't want to, and I didn't want to do it again, but I fell into these patterns. My brain wouldn't click into gear for me. It just wouldn't show up the way I needed it to, and so here I am again. But it's not that they don't care. It's not that they haven't learned. And so we're here today for Awareness Month to build awareness and spread some compassion and information along so we can start to combat the stigma that's associated not just with ADHD, but with people who think differently in the world, people who work differently in the world, what we call the spectrum of neurodiversity. You know, we're all a part of this big spectrum. We've all got, you know, different shades, and that's all okay. There's a place for all of that in the world if we learn how to work with it. So today, we want to talk about living a successful life, a satisfying life, as an adult with ADHD. And yes, it's very, very possible. And we're going to do that several different ways. I'd like for you to really think about maybe if it's yourself or someone you work with or you live with or you love that maybe brings up your interest in ADHD, if you really think about what are some of their strengths, not just some of their challenges today, because we're also going to be talking about our strengths-based approach. And so while we want to talk a lot about what ADHD means on a daily basis, we also want to keep in mind that sometimes it means you're pretty awesome, actually. Yeah. So that's the lens through which we'll be talking today. And there's a great, great support in our community, and that's why we have our team here with us. So with that, we're going to get started with our panel, Siri.
Great. Great. Well, thanks, Michelle. And I just want to welcome you all here today to celebrate ADHD Awareness Month. And so we can actually celebrate, like Michelle was saying, the gifts and the differences of all of us in this room and everybody we love who brought us here today. So We have a wonderful team in Ann Arbor, and today we want to, after we talk a little bit about how we view ADHD, we want to show you how we also look at comprehensive treatment and how we help people that come to see us by fitting in these wonderful support, nationally recognized speakers that we're lucky enough to have in the metro area. So we're going to hear from each one of them and get a chance to hear what piece of the supportive puzzle they put together when we help an individual, not one size fits all. So we're going to have a great time tonight and have plenty of time for questions and answers. But first, Susan's going to ask us some questions.
Yeah, I have some questions.
Okay.
So here we go.
Okay.
So here we go.
She's like Ellen. She's playing Ellen today.
She's playing Ellen.
We didn't make her dance, but maybe later.
Okay, the first question is for you, Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
As a psychologist, I'm sure you get a lot of questions about diagnosis and research. There's a lot of misunderstanding about ADHD in the media and the community at large. Mm-hmm. Is it true that ADHD is often overdiagnosed?
Okay. Wrong. I'll do the shimmy later to just balance it out. So ADHD is overdiagnosed in a small subset of the population, and that's typically white, hyperactive, school-aged boys. Part of the reason for that is because of the stigma and the myths about ADHD in that a white, hyperactive, school-age boy is the prototype of ADHD. And so that child is more likely to get recognized and sent for an evaluation than someone else. However, for the most part, ADHD is largely misdiagnosed, and it's certainly underdiagnosed in certain populations, predominantly in women and populations of color. And that, again, has to do with that bias in the research. It's a very unfortunate thing. I think
that's
good.
The answer.
Thank you.
It was the best answer. Sorry, I'll stop.
Huge.
I will.
Okay, so Sari, what is the impact of misdiagnosis or late-in-life diagnosis?
Yeah, and that's what we deal with a lot, because a lot of times women, inattentive men, they have no idea how to explain their experiences growing up. And that is causes so much more than just the difficulty or the overwhelm of having ADHD. It causes, you can imagine, a great deal of confusion growing up, knowing you have a lot of skills, you have a lot of strengths, you have a lot of things you want to express, but you have no idea how to get it out or what's going wrong. Nobody can explain to you. So that's growing up with a really distorted sense of self. You start focusing on your deficits and not seeing this whole array of who you are as a whole person. So it's a very confusing experience, and it leads to this idea that most people who come to see us come with the idea that it's a character flaw. And you grow up and you spend many years thinking you have a character flaw, despite trying to solve this mystery your whole life. That has a great deal to do with how you're going to be in adulthood, how you're going to relate to other people, the power that you're going to have in relationships, the way you put yourself out there to be able to achieve. Underachievement's a great difficulty for many adults with ADHD, not knowing that they have a way to show themselves and lead fulfilling lives. And then also, obviously, mood, which is one of the reasons why adults get a diagnosis often, but by then it's a diagnosis of depression or anxiety, which they have, but often it's secondary to this mystery of a primary attentional challenge that they've had all their life. So it has profound impacts on a person's life, not being diagnosed or getting an adult diagnosis. Also, many adults, though, they compensate without even knowing it. And so they self-medicate sometimes with huge amounts of Diet Coke or cigarettes or alcohol or overwork. It's funny, people say that people with ADHD are lazy. I say they're the hardest working lazy people, you know, you've ever seen, because they're working constantly and they overwork to make up for their difficulties, or they isolate and they withdraw from other people. So they're paying a price somewhere. And even though they might look good on the outside because they're smart and they're working so hard, there's behind the scenes a great deal of distress.
I was talking to a woman who said that she's made great friends with the janitorial staff at her office, because she's there every morning. It's the best time for her to focus, And also she always feels behind with her paperwork and needs to spend extra hours. She probably works 70, 80 hours a week for what's typical 40-hour week job. Mm-hmm. And that's, I give that example because it's very common.
Yeah, very common.
That makes sense.
So there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that you don't see, even though you might see somebody presenting well, and you said they couldn't possibly have these difficulties, and it's confusing for you if you're living with somebody with these difficulties who are working so hard and compensating, but behind the scenes, it's a lot of stress.
Hmm. Cool. So, Sari, you're a pioneer in the field of ADHD.
It means I'm old.
Particularly with women and inattentive type in men and women. What can you tell us about the history of ADHD, especially for adults?
Well, it was in the early 90s where the first book started coming out about adults with ADHD. It was Hollowell and Rady wrote those first books about Driven to Distraction. And it was then that we understood that adults continued to have difficulty even if they lost their hyperactivity. Before, we used to think that people grew out of ADHD because they lost their hyperactivity. So that was the first breakthrough in the early 90s, understanding that these challenges just changed forms, and when you became an adult, they caused a great deal of disorganization and a great deal of stress, even though you lost your hyperactivity. The other big breakthrough was then we realized what was called at that time ADD without hyperactivity, that you never had to have hyperactivity. That's when we understood that women had these challenges, even though they never had hyperactivity, and men continued to have challenges, even if they had a different kind than other men who were hyperactive.
Got it. Sari, what do you find to be some of the most common and most challenging aspects of ADHD for women specifically? Is it true that ADHD is different for women?
It is very different for women. I mean, women have biologically are different. Hormonally, they have challenges that exacerbate the ADHD symptoms. But in my experience, why I wrote the book and what I continue to see is that women define themselves by these executive function difficulties. And so you can imagine from the difficulties that Michelle was talking about, how that collides with the gender role expectations that women still in 2016 have for themselves. You might not think it intellectually, but you see it in therapy, that women still feel like failures when they're not able to be the provider of all that organizational things that women feel that they still should be able to do, even if it's not expected by other people. Pulling things together, all the prioritizing, sequencing, helping children, you know, maintaining friendships, taking care of all the social niceties of life, everything that women want to do because they value relationships, but it's so difficult to keep up with, so that they internalize these expectations and they idealize them and they compare themselves to other women. We call it, instead of body shame that we're all familiar with, this sort of brain shame that women have when they feel they can't organize or put on the dinner parties or do these things that most people do very easily. It's very, very difficult, like Michelle was saying. Some of these things are challenging for everybody, for women with ADD, putting together any kind of organizational event often with all its many components is very difficult, and it leaves women feeling very embarrassed and withdrawn from relationships and often isolated. And the most common thing that women do when they come in to see us is that they feel like they don't deserve to go on and have a satisfying life until they're able to fix all their organizational challenges. So their main mindset is, I'm just going to wait. I'm just going to get organized. And then when I'm all organized, perfectly organized, then I'll let myself go and have a life. But before that, how can I really justify going out and having a life or doing anything when I should be here with these piles and waiting and waiting and waiting? And when we talk about how we view helping people with ADHD differently, it's around those kind of issues, for women especially.
So this question I'll have both of you answer. As therapists and ADHD experts, how do you approach treatment or intervention to help adults with ADHD who walk into your office? And I think I'll start with you, Michelle.
So the reason we gathered a bit of a panel, so to speak, today is because our approach is based in this comprehensive model of treating the whole person. And we believe that while ADHD has its own set of symptoms and clusters of challenges, each person is inherently unique and different. And so learning to live a satisfying life looks very different for me than it does for Sari or you, ADHD or not. So we look at it as treating the whole person. While a lot of providers focus on behavioral interventions and strategies, and we do that a bit, we found that focusing on strategies is necessary but far from sufficient. And this is why. You can have the best time management system in the world. You can clean up the clutter and have a good planner and better communication skills. But if at the end of the day you still feel like a failure who hasn't met their potential, who's lazy and stupid, your planner doesn't matter all that much. So for us, it's about working with the day-in and day-out challenges that ADHD presents, staying focused, managing things in your life, finding the right support. But it's also about helping people find their passions, their strengths, their voice, learning to communicate differently, helping educate family, spouses, or find appropriate accommodations in the workplace. Sometimes people require coaching or academic support or a professional organizer to come in. And so we like to think in terms of the big picture of who a person is. And so we encourage you, if you're someone with ADHD or someone who loves or works with someone with ADHD, to think in terms of not just shoring up deficiencies, shoring up the deficit. That only gets you so far. At some point, there's diminishing returns on that investment, I promise you. At some point, you have to start looking at the strengths and the passions and general life satisfaction and working towards greater sort of acceptance of both the challenges and how to support them, but also of the strengths. And oftentimes that does require taking a deep look at some really scary questions about your path and your choices and where to move from here forward, and that's different at various parts of the lifespan as well.
So yeah, just to add to that, because when you have ADHD, you need something stimulating. You can't just say there was one organizational system, if it's Tuesdays, it must be toilets, you know? I mean, like, why would you ever want to get out of bed, you know, if that was your thing for the day? You have to create a compelling future vision to move toward, and then something to organize for, instead of just getting organized for its own sake. And that's why, I'll talk about it later, but when I refer to Susan, I always am encouraging her to help someone create a life through the organization, not just to organize for its own sake. And I think the difference how we view things at our practice is that we agree that having executive function problems are very difficult and they hurt your self-concept. But we also believe that even if your executive function never improves, if your organizational or attentional skills never improve, that doesn't define you, and that you have to have a way to value yourself as a human being and to be valued and to be respected in a relationship. And to respect yourself, because sometimes, you know, you have ADHD, you have different brain wiring, and you can get strategies and medication and support, but in the end, you are who you are, and you want to spend your life having a meaningful and fulfilling life. And I think that's, sometimes when you hear ADHD, a lot of practitioners will say, okay, well, you know, get a new gold-plated planner. And that's not, people with ADHD
they've
are just
tried
like
that.
Yeah.
Tried.
We hope, but we're all human beings, and we all have different challenges, and this is your challenge.
Good. Michelle, in your experience, how does a diagnosis of ADHD and the process of getting help for it impact an individual and their family?
That's a good question. It differs for every family, because we could be talking about, for instance, a college student recently diagnosed and their parents trying to navigate those tricky boundaries of support or, you know, not wanting to intrude and wanting to build independence. Or we could be talking about a shift in a spousal relationship, marriage, or a long-term partner, and some changes there. It's important to remember that getting a diagnosis is oftentimes relieving for people. But it also brings periods of loss and grief, just like anything else, because a lot of folks with ADHD who are diagnosed later in life look back and they can see it so clearly, and they think, if only I had known and gotten help, if only my family had seen this and referred me, if only, parents, if only I had seen it, I didn't know, my kid was doing well, they were really smart, how did I know, and now here we are. So there's a lot of working through that needs to happen within that process. Although I will say that who you are the day after your diagnosis is exactly the same as who you were the morning you woke up and found out about it. So that's an important element to keep in mind too. But anytime you have something like this, mental health diagnoses, there's a shift that happens in terms of the family system. It's just like if someone in the family was diagnosed with diabetes or high blood pressure and needed to change some things about their lifestyle and needed to take a hard look at their stress level and their diet and their activity plan, the rest of the family unit has to adapt and shift and change. Sometimes this requires some family therapy to work through or some couples counseling to work through. How can we support each other and not fall into some old patterns of, you know, nagging and forgetting to do things and arguing about the challenges? How can we develop new ways to talk about it? So it looks a bit different for every family, but it takes time and patience. It's a process just like anything else. And, you know, it's not something you just figure out in 8 to 12 sessions and then move on. It's a learning process, and oftentimes immediately after the diagnosis, there's a boost, there's some relief, there's a lot of learning that happens for everyone. And then you hit a point where you realize, uh-oh, it's not over, is it? Shoot. I still woke up with this, didn't I? And then there's a rediscovering. And that's going to happen, too, at various points in your life. You change jobs, you decide to have children, which for women is a terrifying decision. If ADHD is involved, how can I possibly, you know, take care of a child if I can barely feel like I'm on top of my own life? So when there are these familial shifts or retirement, huge life shift, again, you have to go back and rework. Where do I need some support for my ADHD, or where does my spouse and I need to get some support for this now that our family system is changing? So patience is key in communication and learning.
Cool.
Yeah.
Tonight we're also going to hear from a panel of other types of clinicians and service providers. Sari, can you tell us a bit about the types of support that are available for and benefit adults with ADHD?
Well, I thought I'd go over this handout. This is just an overview of what we think of as comprehensive components that often are involved in managing your life effectively or getting treatment for as an adult with ADHD. And many of the supports that I list on here will be represented by the people that we'll hear from in a minute. But I thought I'd just go over that to give you an idea of when we see clients. At first, we do a consult, a pretty comprehensive consultation, and each person is so different, and each person's at a different stage of life. And some of these services will overlap. No one gets all these services at one time. For one time or another, at one point in your life, if you're going to school, or if you have a very unstructured period of your life, or you're very, you can't even do anything until you, because you're so overwhelmed with organizational challenges, or you need therapy with your husband. Everybody's so different. So that's how we try to look at it. What does this particular person need at this particular time? And then we will bring in one of these team members to supply that piece for a while. And then it's all about supporting you so you can continue on in this journey. But tonight we're talking about post-diagnosis and post-medication, but obviously, the first step is to get an expert assessment and to get, if you want to consider it, and I would encourage you to at least consider it and have a talk with a great psychopharmacologist to understand, since this is neurobiological, how some kind of medication can often be that activating force that can help you then go on to putting these other components into place. It can just sort of give you the fuel to get going. It's definitely just the first step, but often very important for adults to change it up a little bit in their brain and get going so they can put these other pieces into effect.
I do like to say, that sometimes, so the goal is to build a toolbox full of tools and support systems and coping mechanisms, but sometimes you just can't open the box. And sometimes you just need medication to open the box. And you wouldn't question it if it were for diabetes or for asthma or a physical condition. 80% of folks with ADHD benefit from medication. 20% don't respond well. And certainly it's not the right choice for every person. It's a very individual one. But that's why we say it's can be a very helpful adjunct, though a lot of people are hesitant because there's not good information out there. But what I always say is, go have a consultation with a psychiatrist. You can say no. If you find out more about it, if medications don't seem to be, after you discuss the pros and cons for you, what might or might not work for you, you get to decide, should I give this a trial or not? And oftentimes it does require some trial and error to find the right fit. And for some people, medication isn't right. But I did just want to throw that in there because those are often questions I get.
Yeah, and it does take a while, especially for women. Sometimes women need a very pediatric dose of a medication. Often it doesn't feel good because you're getting too big a dose or you're getting the wrong medication. It takes working with somebody with whom you feel a partnership that can help find the right medication for you. Mm-hmm. And the point of medication is not to make you a different kind of person or turn you into or fix you. I always think of it as to help you make it easier for you to be who you are, to get things out, to organize. I mean, the first time I took medication, I was just amazed. I never talked for more than 1 minute at a time. And I was at this family dinner, and I had just taken medication. I just started telling a story. And it was, unbelievable. I could never hold all that information in my head before and put it all together, because it's organizing your thoughts. It's not just the papers around you. So, just having a consultation with an expert is great. The next thing that we think about is support strategies in education, and that's really the kind of people we're going to hear from tonight, people that can help you with the chronic and severe organizational challenges that come with ADHD. So it's not just hiring an organizer who can give this perfect little, kitchen or a closet. This is for understanding what it's like to help somebody and find somebody trained in helping you with severe organizational problems and helping you find strategies that fit your ADHD, not to have you put things in files, which is sort of the death knell to anybody with ADHD because out of sight, out of mind. Yeah. So just then there's the emotional psychoeducational. We're going to hear from people here today who can tell you what I find is the most therapeutic thing for adults with ADHD, to be with actual other people with ADHD, not just so you can commiserate or share challenges, so you can meet these amazing, awesome people, like Michelle said, with whom you feel this affinity. And when you hear other people who have the same struggles as you do, and when you can see their strengths so much more easily and you can see yours, it starts to change your self-concept, which is the whole bottom line. So there's online support and there's in-person support. Then there's coaching. Sometimes you're in a really unstructured period of time, which is the hardest thing, or in a retirement or between jobs, and you have no anchors in your week. And so coaching at that point is an adjunct to therapy, or if you don't need therapy anymore, just to help you move along toward a goal is really important, as well as if you're going back to school or you need special accommodations or you're at work and you need to figure out how to perform well in those situations. Those are coaching that we're going to hear from tonight. And then there's therapy, which is, we'd like to intervene at the place where ADHD sort of meets your personal psychology or your wounds and the things, the hurts that you've developed all those years. And like Michelle said, you need those supports, but then sometimes you'll hit a barrier of shame or avoidance and you won't be able to move forward. And so we're able to put together a comprehensive approach with these wonderful people that you're going to hear from now. So the time, call up. Well, Susan's going to stay here. I'll move my junk out of the way. And then I'll call Doug Harris and Terry Matlin and Jerry Markle and Regina Carey. This is Susan Hunsberger, like I said, who's an amazing, we're so happy to have her here. And she called me up when she moved to this area, and I've just been referring her to everybody I can think of since then, because she's specially trained in helping adults with ADHD and special needs, which is a whole different way of helping people. And she's so patient, and she's so facilitative, and she's so great listener, and she really helps you find a way to organize in a way that's really going to work for you. So maybe, Susan, you could talk about what you do, but also about organizing in general for adults.
Sure. So the first question that I'll answer is, how do I work with my clients as a professional organizer. You know, both of us bring things to our work together. So my clients, what they bring is they bring their knowledge of themselves, and I then bring my years of experience and my education. And all of that is very important. And through conversation and action and experimentation, change happens. So some of what I do when I'm working with clients is I listen, I ask questions, I clarify, I'm present, and we take action. They experiment, the clients experiment, and that's kind of the process. And then it continues. How do my services help? In general terms, something that I do is I can normalize their situation. The reality is that I've been in a lot of homes, and I'm coming into my client's home, and that's a really big deal. Having me come into their space is huge. But what that does is that allows me to honestly let the people know that what they're telling me and what I'm seeing is normal. Mm. And that's true. These are challenges that I see every day. So our work together generally fosters hope and motivation and interest. Specifically, in our work, we attend to overwhelm. We find ways to get started on projects and work on things that are boring. We explore ways to stay focused, switch gears. These are the sorts of things that we work on during a session, and all of that is in the context of their stuff, their papers, and their to-do lists. So how do people access professional organizing services? So one thing that's maybe interesting to know is that some professional organizers, they do specialize in different things, and that's a good thing for you to know. So some specialize maybe in working with the elderly. Some help people move. Some work with people who have hoarding behavior. Some work with those with ADHD or chronic disorganization. So there's an institute, the Institute for Challenging Disorganization. That's where I get a lot of my education. And one thing that you can do is you can go to that website and you can plug in your zip code. And then organizers in your area will come up and you can kind of, it tells a little bit about them and what their training is in. That website is challengingdisorganization.com. That's
me. Susan's.
And then I'm also an organizer, and my information is out on the table.
Your company is Strategize.
Strategize Organize. It's the one with the little green box.
Yes. Great. Thank you, Susan. Yeah. We'll have time to ask you questions afterwards. You know, and there's a lot of overlap between these different services, and it's always something people want to know about. And I try to prioritize who I'm going to refer to for what, but sometimes there's some overlap between organizing and coaching. So maybe we could hear from Regina Carey, who's I think of as more of a life coach for adults with ADHD, and she's so full of life and vigor, and she gets people so activated and gets people to take care of themselves and helps so many people who are in unstructured positions. I've seen her work with entrepreneurs and students and all sorts of people. She has a wonderful background in special education and consultation, and so like to hear how you work with adults, but then just in general maybe about the field of coaching for adults with ADHD.
Okay, thanks. Good evening, everybody. My notes are not nearly as organized as the organizer. So I'm going to tell you, I have been coaching individuals for over 20 years, and I've done it all over the country and even internationally, because there's a whole different variety of ways now that we can connect with people. So face-to-face, Skype, email, texting, variety of ways. And they're all wonderful in their own right. My work focuses on helping people move forward. So different from therapy, I really tell you straight off, I don't care where you've been. I care about where you want to go. So we work on your goals, and everything is driven by what your vision and your intention for your life is. I work with individual clients, and then I also work with companies. So companies have hired me to work specifically with teams and or with a, an employee who they really value, who might be having some difficulties, and so we strategize within the workplace. In January of 2015, I started to facilitate women's groups, women empowerment groups, and that has been an amazing adventure. And I run groups that range anything from anywhere about living your best life to how to create boundaries without guilt and shame. My goal within the next several months, because I said by the end of 2016, I will facilitate a men's group. So I'm so happy to see so many men here tonight. If you have interest, I'm thinking about putting together a call-in coaching group. So if you have interest, make sure you see me after the program and let me know. We'll sign you up. I'm continually amazed as a coach at what happens to people when they decide that they're going to make change. I mean, you come to coaching when you're ready to shift. And it's almost like the universe shifts with you. There's this, I call it the perfect storm. Because when people come and see me, I say, watch out, you better be ready because everything's going to happen now. The good, the bad, the ugly. But on the other side of it, you're going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. And your life is going to be better. And I'm continually amazed at what happens in this, in the unfolding of coaching. So this month, there's a lot of information as we explore Awareness Month. I mean, that's a lot of days to learn about ADHD and learning disabilities, too, as a part of this month. But I encourage you to ask yourself questions this month. What do I want my life to be about? How can I make a difference each and every day? Because I know that's really important to my clients. I have people who want to make a difference and finally have a voice in the world because they've been quiet for too long. When have I scheduled time for myself to do what I love? Where am I in this phase of my life? And who am I spending time with to facilitate my growth? So a lot of what comes out of coaching too is the ridding and the releasing of the stuff that's holding us back. And that could be a thing, it could be a job, it could be a person. Finally, if you want to find me, you can see me on Facebook and like the page Carry On. I don't know if you can see this, my card's out there, but I have the four C's, which is the basis of my coaching. You'll have to go on the site to learn what that's about. And then you can, because if you like my page, then you access these positive messages I send out every day during the week. I also blog every Monday. And I am in the process of publishing a book. And so that announcement will be on social media as well. So I am grateful for your presence here tonight. And thank you for being who you are today. Because you're amazing and you're awesome.
Thank you, Regina. Always inspirational, right? So you can see the positive energy she brings working with our clients. And sometimes people, and it's all a matter of personality, too. Sometimes you'll click with one person versus another person, too. So, you know, it's not, you're going to click with every person. So it's nice to, just like doctors, just like support people, just like therapists. So don't get discouraged if you work with one person and it doesn't click. There's so many variety of people out there. And here's Jerry Markle, and she's an educational psychologist, author of many books about ADHD and performance and learning disabilities. And she's, was with the university for a long time. She's the one that put on the event at Rackham every year for the last 10 years. So we really thank her for that ADHD Awareness Month event we've had the pleasure of attending every year. And So Jerry does, we refer to Jerry for academic and performance coaching. So Jerry, why don't you tell us about what you do?
Hi, it's so nice to be here. Welcome, everyone. I am a performance and a productivity coach. So the relationships, feeling about yourself, that's really one piece of the pie. And so frequently I'm referring out to Sari and Michelle and people who can help get people ready to focus. When you're ready to focus and you need to get action, I am working with people in business and industry as well as in academics. And tonight I'm going to talk about academics. Today you can't get away from school. Years ago, if you were a hands-on person, a creative person, you could get into a position and you didn't have to necessarily take a licensing or a certification test. But now, whether you're going to be a plumber, whether you're going to be a landscape person, whether you're in real estate, you have to take recertification. And really, many, many people are so bright that they have gotten through high school and even college and not discovered until medical school, graduate school, that they have ADD, ADHD, or a learning disability. I call some of those people gifted with a glitch. But what happens is the bar gets higher, the stuff comes faster, and all of a sudden people are overwhelmed. And if you have a history of feeling so shameful because you couldn't do what you thought you could do, this jerk is getting A's, you're working twice as hard and you're not doing well, what is going on? So my job is to frequently ask people who are looking to go back into academics, shift careers, or go on to graduate school or even undergrad, to get a neuropsych test so we could really get a good idea of what your cognitive profile is. What is your memory like? Can you connect the dots? How easy is it for you to remember? What do you have to do to really visualize something? How is your reading? How fast do you process? And we can do work without that, but it's much easier to be able to say, look, you've got these great strengths, and this is what's going to help you get around the barriers that you've been facing. And so once we do that, we can get optimism and motivation. And frequently, as the other experts have said here, sometimes medication gives people just a little bit of energy they need to try a new strategy. In today's school, you really can't get by just by memorizing and answering questions. You really have to be thinking and applying. And so I'm working with medical students, people in law school, people who are trying to get into law school, people who are taking certification, and people perhaps in finance, all of whom have to take these certification tests, which are long, arduous, and very, very intimidating. So I'm here to say that people are available to help when you want to go back to school, when you are in school, when you want to shift careers, that the first step is just really opening up the possibility, thinking about the great things you've done before, and finding some of us who can help you find the strategies to help you get ahead. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
My stuff is outside, and I'd love to talk to you after.
I've seen Jerry turn around so many lives of people, you know, have so many parents of college students have called me. My kids, you know, flunked out. Should I just, you know, take them out of school? And Jerry's worked with these bright young people and got them back into school and turned them around and coached them and helped them. And so there's always hope when you refer to Jerry.
It feels like magic. I forgot about
that. There you go.
We always have a magic wand. After the magic, we'll do some strategies.
It's just like magic. So in addition to the coaching and organizing, like I said before, there's nothing like the support. And now, you know, when my book came out, why it was popular is because it was at the same time that people started talking to each other on the Internet. And that's just continued and now exploded. So even if you never leave your house, you can go to so many webinars and so many wonderful groups, and it's just growing the kinds of forums that are out there for people to connect and get support and education. And then at some point, I always say you have to get out of your room and go someplace and actually be with real people. And so we're lucky enough, for many years, we didn't have an adult support group in Ann Arbor. We used to have one then, and it must have been 20 years went by. And then we formed an adult support group, and it's been a wonderful addition for the community. A young man named, social worker named Matthew Cunningham has ran that group for many years and has just stepped down and Doug Harris, along with a few other people in the group, have taken the helm, and so we asked Doug here today to talk about what it's like to go to the Ann Arbor Adult Support Group and get what that's like, what psychoeducation like, what support groups like versus therapy, and just to talk to you about his group and about that experience that people get there. Doug was a coach himself now.
Hi, I'm Doug Harris. I am a coach.
Oh, and he works with the gifted people with ADHD, right?
I won't say that.
Thank you. I'm reading your bio.
So I'm one of the lead organizers of the Ann Arbor Area ADHD/ADD Support Group. That's a lot of A's, I know. If you're interested in this at all, you can find us on meetup.com. It's easy to find us. So our support group has two different types of live events. The first one are the psychoeducational programs, where we bring in some expert speaker to talk about something that they are an expert on. And we're really fortunate in Southeast Michigan that there are just so many experts. And I have colleagues in other parts of the country that just complain to me that it's not fair. Basically half the people in ADD, I think, are in this area. So we get some great speakers. And so naturally with great speakers, there's great content. But what's really special, I think, for me is that we hold a lot of time for questions and answers. So you can hear some of this information maybe on a podcast or a webinar or read it online, but here you get to actually ask your own questions, and that's really cool. And the other type of event we hold, the kind I'm most psyched about, are peer support group meetings. These are opportunities for people with ADHD to get together with their tribe and to share their challenges, but also their successes. We're a resourceful group of people. We've figured a lot out over the years, so we like to share it with each other, and it's amazingly helpful. There's no formal program. We don't do formal very well. I'm an ADHD coach, but I'm not a leader. I'm just another guy with ADHD when we do this. We're just a group of equals. And the topics we bring are just whatever comes up that day. It's a real potluck of just who's there.
Sometimes literally a potluck.
Yeah, literally sometimes. There are two venues for these peer support groups. One is on the third Saturday of each month at the First Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Ann Arbor. We call these our coffee chats. And I say coffee because we don't provide coffee. If you don't bring your coffee, it's just a chat for you. So just be forewarned, this is not false advertising of any type. The other venue are, again, the Washtenaw Intermediate School District building where we have the other talks, the speakers. We will have those, will be also be discussion groups if we intentionally don't have a speaker scheduled for that month. I'm not going to pretend it's about scheduling on our part. We do it on purpose. As incredibly helpful as medication, therapy, and coaching can be, there's really no substitute for being around a bunch of people like you who get you. It's really hard to put into words the experience. People with ADHD put a lot of effort into hiding their ADHD traits. And when they get with this group, suddenly you find you can put down your shield, you can let yourself be your authentic self, let your freak flag fly with your ADHD, and people accept you and they like you. And it's really cool. Routinely, someone will bring up a topic. They would be mortified to talk about this in front of another group. But when they talk about it in front of the support group, if they're brave enough, what they find are that people are smiling and nodding because these people have been there and they get it. You know, and most of them are probably thinking, thank God it's not just me. I see that. I know that expression. I can recognize that pretty well. We discuss some fairly serious topics, but it's always fun. You can't get a lot of ADHD people in a room without it being somewhat of a party. We laugh a lot. These groups are as ADHD-friendly as we can make them. We don't have a lot of rules. One of the rules, though, is that if you're not supposed to apologize for being late. That's not acceptable. Yeah, we'd rather you came late than not at all. So that's our attitude. And you can come when you need to come, leave when you need to leave. If you get a cramp in your leg, stand up in the middle of it. If you have to go to the bathroom, just go. No one's going to judge you because why would that be hypocritical? And so we get it. It's like a bizarro world if you're compared to the normal world where anything goes. Unfortunately, our peer support groups and most of the psychoeducational programs are geared just towards adults, and that just reflects the interest of the current group of leaders. If someone's interested in trying some of these things like the peer support with in terms of children and teens. That'd be great. Talk to us. We just need some champions for that.
I thought there was a children's parent group. Wasn't there a parent group?
There is right now, but there's not any currently meetings. The closest meetings for that are the Northville Chad, which I guess they moved over to the church right off Godfredson Road. Not too far from Ann Arbor. And that's it.
Okay, well, thanks, Doug. Thank you. Then last but not least, before we start our questions and answers, Terry Matlin, who's like an amazing resource and a wonderful author of two great books on the subject for especially women and with ADHD and runs some amazing groups and sort of is the queen of online support. And so I thought, Terry, before, in addition to telling what you do, I realized we haven't really talked about ADDA or Attitude or some of the other great organizations out there, and maybe you can mention also in your
Thanks, Terry. My name is Terry Matlin, and I'm a psychotherapist, author, a coach, and a consultant. And I have to tell you, you guys are really lucky to be in this area. I'm in Oakland County, but you have this fabulous group of professionals that you can count in. Just like what Doug was saying, is that people have told him that we're lucky, you're lucky to have this group of professionals in this town. You guys are really lucky to have these folks. So please take advantage of them being here for you. A little bit about me. Well, adult ADHD really wasn't recognized until the mid to late 80s. And then these great books came out, Sarah's book came out, Ned Halliwell, Driven to Distraction. So then it became more of an understanding in the popular sense. So I got really involved. I got really interested as I was learning about my own ADHD. Yes, I do have ADHD, as does one of my daughters. I started getting really active in the nonprofit organizations that Sarah was mentioning. ADDA is ADD.org. And they are a national organization that focuses on adults with ADD. And CHADD is CHADD.org. They are also a national organization, and they deal with kids and adults, primarily kids, I would say. But they're getting into more adult things. So I got really involved, and I was on the board of ADDA for many, many years. And then people got to know who I was. And I started getting emails from people from all over the world. And then I realized, you know, there's something missing here. A lot of people can't afford to go to these big conferences. They can't get babysitters. They can't get away from work. And I was thinking there's a gap here. So I launched ADD Consults back in the year 2000, where people could connect with me individually if they wanted one-on-one help, but also they could get information about articles and the latest research. So this was a fascinating thing to me because people with ADD tend to really like being online. If you're anything like me, I could spend many, many hours, and that can be a problem where I need a coach to, you know, get me to get off the computer. But as some of you, some of the panelists have talked about, it's really treatment for ADD, you know, including counseling, therapy, medication, coaching, working with a professional organizer. But what we're missing, and Sterry brought it up too, is that this sense of connection, the importance of being with other people, and this is what Doug does too in his support groups, and it's essential to find other people who are like you, who can understand who you are and celebrate who you are and have fun. Like I was just laughing, you know, hearing what some of the things that Doug was just saying. We do have a lot of fun. So it's essential to try and, if you can't get to a live group that, say, that Doug runs, or if you can't go to a conference that's like the CHADD conference is coming up in November, but it's in California. That can be pretty difficult for most of us to get to. I mean, if you can, I would recommend that you do. But if you can't, then we have all these online resources, and that's where I come in. So I took everything online in 2000, and there's tons and tons of websites out there now, and you do need to be careful where you get your information because there's so much bad information out there. So I hope that you all picked up a handout on that table by the wall there, and I have a list of respectful websites, including Sarah's and Dr. Markle's, and I just, you know, put the ones in that I'm fairly confident that are safe and give you really good information. What I'm doing now is opening up more Facebook groups because people are really into connecting. You don't have to have ADHD to want to connect or need to connect. But these Facebook groups, I'm running one for women with ADHD, and it's huge. I've got over 5,000 members, and these are fabulous people, sensitive, kind, loving, intelligent women who really have a need to connect with each other. So I would suggest that you get on, if you're a woman with ADHD, I also have a group for moms. I tend to work more with women, so, you know, I'm more focused on that. But on that list over there, you'll find ways to find groups for any adult. So I don't know if you realize, but when you're on Facebook, there is a search bar at the top, and you can just type in adult ADHD, and a bunch of these groups will come up. Or if you're a parent of a child with ADHD, you know, type in parent of child with ADHD. So there's a lot of face group groups going on now that are really, really terrific. And then the red flags that I really want to talk to you about, if you're not online as much as I am, and I can kind of tell right away, you know, this is not right, are the sites that tout miracle cures. They take this pill and all your ADD will disappear. You know, run. Just run, because there is no cure for ADHD. Also, websites that are anti-medication. Now, it was talked about earlier, the medication isn't right for everybody. But if you're on a site where it says medication is the worst thing, it's going to change you, and it's going to make you, you know, into a robot, or you're going to lose your creativity, that's another red flag. So watch for those kinds of things when you go online searching for this information. Also, Twitter. A lot of people are looking at Twitter now. Pinterest. Oh, my gosh. I can get lost for hours and hours and hours on Pinterest. And it started out as like home and garden kind of stuff, and now you can find anything on Pinterest. So look on Pinterest. I have a Pinterest site at Terry Matlin. And podcasts, a lot of really, really good podcasts. I don't think I listed them on my sheet, but there's some really, really good ones if you do a search on ADD podcasts. So if you have any questions, I know I'd love to talk with you out there, or you can email me at Terry, T-E-R-R-Y, at addconsults.com.
All right. Thanks so much for being here. I never occurred to me that I might have ADHD, and what you're talking about is like, oh my God. So I'm a little overwhelmed about how to approach it, because it seems like there's a lot of ways. And my son last year was diagnosed with ADHD, and I'm always accusing my husband of having ADHD. And so, for me as a woman, mom, you know, kind of running the show, trying to keep things under control and, you know, not so chaotic. You had mentioned a psycho evaluation, neuropsych evaluation. My son had one. But it was a long process to get him, you know, in to the clinic at U of M. Is it the same process that we have to go through for an adult too, or what do you got?
Michelle, you want to talk about that? Yeah. Oh, yeah. So there are a few different ways to get information about whether or not you have ADHD. Mm-hmm. So for some people, that means getting a diagnosis of ADHD. For other people, hey, no, you don't. Neuropsychological testing is one way. And it's a very comprehensive process, like you said. A good neuropsych eval should take a good 8 hours, often a full day or broken up into two segments. It includes a diagnostic interview and then a series of cognitive tests, kind of like brain teasers or games, puzzles, tests of your reading, writing, math, nonverbal IQ, verbal IQ, things like that, to get an idea about what your cognitive profile is. Very, very helpful for information, especially regarding academic performance or if there does seem to be an additional learning delay. There are very specific tests that do have a lot of research behind them in terms of being pretty valid indicators of ADHD, but overall, no one test is accurate. You need to take the big picture. So neuropsych testing isn't right for everyone. Sometimes it's more about doing some behavioral rating scales, getting a thorough, comprehensive history and information about current presenting symptoms, but also looking back. Sometimes that involves also asking a spouse or a parent to chime in and give some information. So a psychologist can diagnose, a psychiatrist can diagnose, a psychotherapist can diagnose. A neuropsychologist certainly as well.
We just wouldn't probably advise you just hear this talk or read one book and run out and sign up for that whole neuropsych. battery. Right. You know, that's why we like to have people come in just at early stages. We can tell you if we think you're on the right track or if we think it's something else, or we can sort of see, you know, would you profit from a more of a structured interview? There's some great tools out there. So it's good just not to rush right into that. And so that's why we like to have a consult first to see your whole picture.
Sari, I'd like to add one thing.
Go ahead.
I think sometimes we don't realize that ADD doesn't function by itself, and its handmaidens may be anxiety, may be depression. And so many people are going to therapists, and they feel that depression is okay or their anxiety, but things still aren't going well. So that's the time to talk to a therapist and say, gee, I had this idea, or have you ever seen this, or to ask, because it takes somebody clever to do an interview to see what actually is the main trigger, or maybe you have two things going on that are interwoven. It gets complicated.
It's important to see a specialist with ADHD. Unfortunately, there is a lack of understanding even in the medical and clinical communities. I've talked to people whose doctors have said, you can't have ADHD, you're smart, you graduated college. So that's really terribly unfortunate. And luckily, though, there are plenty of practitioners that we know in the area who do specialize. But again, a lot of people still fall into that myth. I mean, even when I went to graduate school, you were taught ADHD as far as 18 diagnostic criteria. You weren't taught about it as an executive functioning dysregulation. You weren't taught all of the research behind it. It was pretty cut and dry. Here's what you got. And it was focused on kids.
Yeah.
So I had to undergo a lot of seek out my own training to specialize.
Yeah.
So you also have to just be aware and research who you're going to.
Right. One of the things that was said that really got me listening was about the sleep thing, the fatigue.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the things I've been working on. And what first came up for me was I was iron deficient.
Uh-huh.
So now I'm working through that, and my levels are now up. And then now it's like, what do I do next? So it's like kind of I'm trying to, you know, address it, like one aspect at a time. And so it's like, is that something that you are able to actually, you know, ask into, or
we're talking to you at a consult, we would know that, see that as red flag, and that would be part of why we would refer you to the psychopharmacologist we work with, because a lot of women have this sort of borderline kind of narcolepsy where they can't stay awake in all these situations, nothing related to being tired, and that's where a stimulant might be helpful for you. But it's just women often have a very sleepy, kind of non-activated brain. So,
in the far future, when there's, like, say, a hypothetical perfect therapy, for, you know, to keep ADHD within the certain parameters, what would that therapy look most likely look like? Combination drug therapy, or gene therapy, or counsel?
All of the above.
All of the above.
But it depends on the person.
You know, there's really decades of research for each one of these. And I think it's only now, as we're moving into some of the real biology and, psychopharmacology, that we're really looking at that. I think it just, as you said, is an independent thing. You have to see what works and then go on from there.
Well, we only have another one question, and then we're going to have to do our book signing, and we want to be out on time. So,
all right, I'll try to make it quick.
That's okay.
Is there anyone doing work correlating diet and allergies and other blood tests or urine tests that might correlate to these symptoms?
So what research tells us is that while diet is important for everyone, right? Too much sugar, not good. Unless you have an underlying food allergy, there's no correlation between diet and ADHD. You're born with your brain before you start eating. You know. Now, does excessive amounts of sugar help anything? Absolutely not. In fact, a lot of people with ADHD benefit a great deal from limiting sugar, increasing protein and complex carbohydrates and greens, but I would argue that to be the case for most people. There is a correlation, however, in terms of improved outcomes with exercise. So exercise is certainly correlated with just managing the symptoms. That's also true for mood disorders. That's also true for age-related cognitive decline.
Sleep and things like that.
Sleep is a big thing. And on the other hand, you know, people with ADHD sometimes crave sugar more. So it's not necessarily sugar makes kids hyper. Sometimes hyper kids crave more sugar. And that's true for adults, too. Why? Because sugar activates dopamine and serotonin in our brains. And so it's a one way of self-medicating, just like with caffeine. And then sleep, again, that can be chicken or the egg. A lot of people with ADHD struggle with sleep disorders, and that's either a co-occurring thing that's separate, or ADHD life just makes your sleep cycle get out of sync. So
in an effort to be timely here and respectful, they want us to be out of here by about no later than 1:45, so we wanted to stop. So I want all our wonderful guests to go out in the waiting room there, and I want to thank you all for joining us. Thank you.